are back. You are listening to Davidson. Right now I'm flying solo. I don't know where everybody went. Everybody left me, but that's all right. On the break, I hope you guys enjoyed that. We don't always play a comedy on the show, but we were playing Joan Rivers, like I said, from The Tonight Show from 1982 when she was filling in for Johnny Carson. Of course, she used to be a regular fill-in host for Johnny Carson, and then she got her own show on Fox, her own talk show, short-lived, I think less than a year. And that caused a rift between Joan and John and Johnny Carson, and they never spoke again. And Joan Rivers was devastated by that. But, you know, unfortunately this year we've lost a lot of comedians. We lost David Brenner. We lost John Panette. You know, we just lost Joan Rivers. A ton more. But I just feel that, you know, she deserved a little bit more than a mention, because I kind of feel like she belongs on the Mount Rushmore of comedians with what she did. She was a... in my opinion, very groundbreaking. Let me just find. I guess we should do a little comics in the news. Music. Yeah, look at them all filing back like rats on a ship. Except rats don't go in reverse.
We didn't realize that recess was over.
Well, you know, I shouldn't wander too far. That's not my fault.
We were talking about puppets.
You were talking about what?
Puppets.
Yeah. I was just telling Joe that there was this guy that I was really into that was in one of my theater groups, and a straight guy. And I thought that something was going to happen between us. We were spending a lot of time together, blah, 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 blah. He tells me that he confides in me, shyly, that he had this little stuffed camel that he used to make talk with his wife. And he was like, you know, he missed being able to do that, blah, blah, blah. And then later he became a puppet master. I said, oh, I'm not surprised because, you know, he used to make Clarence talk. And he's like, I told you that? And I'm like... Dick, I was thinking that here's this big moment. He's confiding in me. He didn't even remember telling me.
I'm gonna go back to Joan Rivers now.
Yeah, okay.
Glad we did that. Ooh.
And now it's time for Comics in the News.
So a lot of people, unless you live under a rock, Joan Rivers passed away this past year. Past week.
Yeah. This
yeah.
past year. Yeah. they're hearing static in the chat room.
I don't know why they're hearing static.
I don't know. They're hearing a little.
I haven't changed anything. Mm. They're still hearing it now?
Yeah.
I don't hear static in my phones.
No, neither do I.
Neither do I.
Nobody say a word. Not on our end. Not from the broadcasting end.
No.
Because there's nothing coming out of our feed.
Never is.
Noted. No, I don't know. I don't know why. Is that everybody or just a few of them? Or?
Well, yeah. They're all hearing it.
Is it on the davinsden.com feed? Then I got to contact them.
Yeah, I don't. It's on the in the chat on the Davinsden feed. So,
yeah,
but it just started.
It had been a couple months since we had issues, so why not? All right. Well, let me know if it persists.
Okay. Like a rectal itch.
Is it unlistenable?
Like a rectal itch.
Like, is it completely distorting it or?
No, they can hear.
All right.
But it's just that they're hearing a little staticky.
I don't know what that is.
It must be my mood.
Right. So anyway, she passed away this past week and everything rather suddenly.
Yes.
But, I mean, you know, she was having surgery, which she would want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't plastic surgery this time. It was something on her throat.
Throat, but it wasn't minor surgery. It wasn't like a big deal.
Supposedly.
It was at a doctor's office. It wasn't even like at the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal until somebody dies.
Yeah, that becomes a big freaking deal.
Well, on paper it wasn't a big deal. Apparently when things went a-rolling, things got pretty bad.
Yes, they did, Jeff. they got pretty bad. She won't be skipping like a faggot anymore, will she, Joe?
Tom wants to know when you're getting fired for using that word.
Skipping?
Yeah, skipping.
There'll be a meeting after the show.
Joe, we prefer Gallup on this show.
Yeah, you know, you can't be saying skipping, you know, Gallup, you know, sponsors and you know, stuff.
Meandering. Oh, meandering. There I go. Now I'm fired.
Yes, well, that's not a bad idea. You know, I've always been a fan, like not an avid fan of hers. Like I'm not really an avid fan of any comic. I don't track them down and everything, but I've always admired her.
Yeah,
I mean, what about you?
Well, she was a trailblazer for women.
I agree with that too.
Incredibly so.
I mean, because she kind of her and Phyllis Diller were kind of similar.
Yeah.
In the fact that they would pretty much say anything.
Yeah,
which was not the typical way. And you know, Joan Rivers was a bulldog on stage.
Mm. Yeah.
She would not take crap.
She didn't take prisoners either about, you know, whoever she was talking to. I mean, you now fashion police, they're all sitting there yucking it up about, you know, what people look like, what they're wearing and everything. She used to say it right to their faces on the red carpet. Now that takes some big balls.
And the basic element of comedy, the world puts curtains around everything.
Yeah.
A comic's job is to take those curtains and rip them apart, mm-hmm. and see what's behind it and show it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And she never stopped doing that. And she ruffled feathers. You know why? Because somebody had to hang the curtains. So it's just, and she never lost her edge. She was just as edgy as a Louis C. You know, the styles were different, but she was just as edgy as a Louis C.K.,
mm-hmm.
as a Dave Attell, you know,
right.
as a Stanhope, as any of those guys.
Because she was constantly striving to remain be current.
Yes.
A lot of comedians, not even just older comedians, a lot of comedians, they get their 45 an hour, whatever it is, and that's kind of what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
you
hit
know,
their stride and stay.
I could think of some fairly famous ones that I'm like, I get it, it was huge in the 80s when you wrote that bit, but can you move on?
Yeah, right, yeah. right. She always kept progressing.
Well, at least she didn't. Because I was listening to a bunch of clips today. She was always updating her references.
Yes.
As far as who she would target.
Mm-hmm.
But her themes about her take on relationships, her take on aging, her take on being a woman,
yeah.
her take on her respect or lack thereof for herself as far as, you know, how she viewed her appearance to people.
Yeah.
That was consistent through the decades.
Oh, yeah. No, she definitely had the same persona all the way through. And as Lisa said in the chat, she said what we all thought.
Well, I mean, she said what a lot of people thought.
Yeah.
She also pissed off a lot of people, so that means she said what other people didn't think.
Oh, yeah. Well,
which I like.
There's a lot of people in show business with really thin skins.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
yeah.
Well, we even talked about a couple weeks ago how she might be one of them.
Yes, yes.
Which I really felt bad about. Like, I came down against Joan, and then she died.
I know. Well, you never know, though.
I'm sure that was the cause. She was so upset about what we said.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. She just said, you know what, overdose me while I'm taking this.
I kind of felt bad, too, because it was...
Well, you were actually more on her side than I was.
Well, I was, but the thing, what my whole take on it was, if you're going to dish it out, you can't, you have to sit there and you have to fight through the segment. You can't walk off the segment. You have to sit there and fight through it.
I just want to chalk it up to she was having a bad day.
Yeah, probably.
That's kind of what I want to chalk it up to.
Well, out of respect to her, yes, chalk it up as she
was. But I even thought so at the time. I'm like, there's not a lot of these stories of her storming off.
No, she wasn't known to do that. Well, you also think about it that now we're hearing all of these tributes to her, and people are saying, you know, what she was like behind the scenes, too, when she was a very warm, generous, compassionate person.
We're going to have one of those people in a few minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're going to call Chris Monty in a few minutes, who wrote with Joan Rivers in 1999 for her radio show.
Great.
And then from 2010 to 2013, he opened on the road for her periodically. So I'm sure he's got some stories and insights that the average person doesn't have. So we're going to talk to Chris in just a few seconds. But I want to Joe, don't look for it. I've already spoken to him. I see you looking at me. Relax.
I just
while you guys were all talking about stupid puppets on the break, I was doing bit work as usual.
Oh, the curtain is stripped away from Davin's den as well.
Yeah, well, usually Joe waits till the third segment to look furrowed. he was a little quick on the furrow tonight, so I had to know why. Or at least a rape segment of furrow.
Once again, I'd love to give you a shut up, but I'm not going to relax. All right, good.
Relax, Joe. I'll do everything. You sit back and just look pretty.
I got you.
Skip along like a faggot, if you will.
Yes, I will.
Goodness gracious. So, is she an icon? Does she belong in the Mount Rushmore of comedy?
Absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely. Without a doubt.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I don't think she ever really got that respect in life.
No. Well, she really did have a roller coaster career because...
It was not all ups like you think.
No.
They get their break, and then it's, you know, everything's wonderful. That was not Joan Rivers at all. You're right.
No. Things would happen, and, you know, she'd get fired from this, and, you know, she'd have a show, and then it would falter, but she always got right back up, and she worked hard,
She
man.
Worked damn hard.
Always
she
wanted to be on stage.
Still working every gig she can get.
Yeah.
You know, till right up to the end. Basically, she was a groundbreaker for female comics.
Groundbreaker for female comics, but one of the best comics, male or female.
Yes.
Yes.
That's why, you know, when you hear these stupid comics like, you know, from a Jerry Lewis,
mm-hmm.
you know, women aren't funny. I would say Joan Rivers isn't funny. I mean, I was like, listen, just older clips, because I was putting together a couple of clips that we're going to play tonight, played one earlier. And I'm watching videos of comics which usually don't make me laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. Or even I was driving a couple days ago, they were doing a tribute on SiriusXM to her. She had laugh out loud jokes.
Yes, she did.
I mean, this is from a comic, and I'm just like, wow, that's really funny.
Yeah. And you know what? The other thing is that for some reason, we're getting there, but we were not used to as a culture to see women being really vulgar and funny vulgar.
No, we're there.
Sarah Silverman.
No, but that's what female comics usually are at this point. Vulgar, filthy pigs, a lot of them.
Thank you.
Yeah, not vulgar, filthy,
Joan Rivers wasn't a vulgar, filthy pig. She talked about adult subjects.
Yes.
She would use words, but she wasn't a vulgar, filthy pig.
But she was a presence. She was a presence on
stage. Well,
that's
what it was. She was so dynamic.
It was dynamic, a present, charismatic. I mean, she was the total package. And everything about her, it's like what we just discussed. She did pave the way for female comics in the business. She can't be classified as a female comic. She is classified as a comics comic.
Mm-hmm.
She was, you know, and she reinvented herself. She went through that whole thing with Carson because she wound up getting her show.
Yeah.
And Johnny just wouldn't give her a time of the day. And then she got kind of blackballed, but she fought back. She worked hard, rebuilt her career. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an icon, and she still was edgy as a Louis C.K.
That's who she compared herself to. She said, if you like Louis C.K., you'll like me.
Yeah, she's like a Louis C.K., as a David Tell, all the edgy comedians today, Norton, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And a tribute for somebody that was in their 80s, you know. It's a great loss for comedy, it really is.
Yeah. I think the thing I admire most about her is just whether it be on stage or off stage, she didn't take crap.
No.
Which as a comic, I mean, so many times you want to stand up for yourself, you can't. Whether it be the audience being a douche to you, or a club, or in her case, you know, bigger business, you know, or even she would get hecklers and everything. The woman never backed down. She was a bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
And it had an emotional toll on her. If you've seen any of the, you know, movies that they did about her, like the biography that she put out in like 2010 and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you said she was blackballed and everything.
Yeah.
It certainly had a toll, but you gotta love that fight.
Yeah.
That spirit. That's what I admire most about her.
It's the spirit, not taking crap, and the work ethic. She works so hard, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, gigging every chance you could get.
And also she was a good businesswoman because she was doing things, you know, thinking outside of the box and doing different kinds of shows. She, you know, it wasn't just like just
home
a radio show.
She had a radio show. She had the I guess the A&E show. Mm-hmm. With their daughter.
It was a
reality show, but she also had like a little interview show where she sat in bed and interviewed people.
You know,
that was fun.
It's just keeping up and reinventing what you can do in the business.
Yeah.
Which is, and you know, in this business, when you start out as a comic, you've got your 5 minutes or whatever it is, and then you bridge to get to 30 and to an hour or whatever. But being a comic is just a part of it as you progress.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things you could do. Like I said, we do, you know, Davin and the three of us do this radio show. I'm working on a play, you know, I got, you know, this, that, and the other thing. So you branch out from it, you know, and that's trying to evolve in the business from this epicenter of being a comic.
Right.
And that's what she did.
Which is us also, you know, pretty unique because there are some people that, you know, especially somebody that, you know, took a lot of hits in, not that everybody in the industry doesn't take some hits, you know, but they're not usually right in the front. Like,
I feel like the goddamn Titanic.
Like front page firings, you know?
I mean,
it's like, ouch, okay, you know, she took some really big hits, but she also was brave enough to try to reinvent herself, but get out of her own comfort zone, you know? Like, sometimes people get into, you know, like, I don't want to pick on him, but Larry the Cable Guy, it's like, you know, get her done. It's the same thing. It's the same stuff all the time.
That's his bread and butter. To get out of that comfort zone would be suicide for him because he's got such a face. But it's as a performer, it's tough and it's thrilling at the same time to try to get out of that comfort zone. And it's scary. And you try.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, when Davin and I, you know, when I left the show, for that while. I mean, I did the Dick Eldorado thing, which is getting in character and trying. It was out of my comfort zone.
Yes.
But it was kind of a thrill to do it because, you know, it's out of the zone.
Right.
You know, when we had Rotgut with the band, we were just playing straight ahead rock for years, and we just went out of our comfort zone.
And dude, you were wearing a dress.
Wearing a dress. We're playing punk fuck. We're doing
bits. Skipping like a fag.
Skipping like a fag.
Oh, God.
It was something when we first started doing it, it was really out of our comfort zone. But it was thrilling to do it, and it was kind of, you know, it was moving ahead. And that whole experience of that band has affected me. I know it's affected Joe and Aunt and I, how we do things in entertainment now, just because we had that experience. So, yeah, that whole out-of-the-comfort-zone thing is a big deal, man. It's tough to do, but if you could do it, right on, you know.
All right, let's call somebody that knew Joan personally.
Yes.
Shall we? All right, let me call here. We're going to go this way. We were working out the logistics while you guys were having a good time. Oh. Some of us keep the show moving along.
I'm so glad. No, I'm glad, actually, that somebody was talking to the folks while we were out at recess.
Sorry, we're the Lemmings.
We were playing kickball.
Yeah.
Out in the street. Car!
Would you love to hear that, like, in a real professional kickball game? Car, let's go to break. We already have a car.
At least it's not hockey where you have to pick up the net. Move along.
All right, Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Monte.
What's going on, Curry?
Hey.
Chris and Joe know each other, much to Chris's displeasure.
Yeah, anger management.
Yeah.
We are joined by Chris Monty, who, as I said earlier, wrote with Joan Rivers on a radio show in 1999, opened for Joan from 2010 to 2013. Chris, welcome to Davin's Den with myself, Joe, and Pip Helix. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for coming on. We're thrilled that you could take this time out to do this with us. I just want to jump right into this with you. Were you a fan of hers before you met her?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when I was a kid, you know, I used to watch. I was a big fan, like most of us were, of The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And anytime Joan was on, it was a treat. And I used to actually beg my mother to let me stay up and watch the Carson monologue when I was in, like, you know, grammar school. And she'd say, no, Friday, let's stay up Friday. And then the summertime would come, and Johnny would go on vacation for, like, 2 weeks. And Joan was the host. And during the summer, my mother would let me stay up every night. And she'd say, my mother and I would actually get excited. She'd say, it's Joan Rivers week. And so my mother got me into Joan Rivers as I was a kid. And then when I got to meet her and work with her, it was just like a dream come true because, you know, I idolized her as a kid.
Did you have any, like, because you had watched her, and she had a very strong presence, you know, on those Tonight Show, on her appearances on The Tonight Show, whether she was hosting or you know, just a guest or just doing comedy. Did you have any preconceived notions of her before you met her, of what she might be like?
Yeah, I mean, I thought she might be like she was in person, like she, what her character was, because she was very bawdy and rough and tough and didn't take any crap. And so I'll tell you a funny story. I'm drinking one night in a bar.
That's
with
odd.
Jackie Marlin, the joke man. And it was, at the time, I was in Monty and Lund, the comedy team of Monty and Lund.
Look at you plugging shit that doesn't exist.
It was a bar on Long Island. And we meet him there every Wednesday. A friend of ours is a bartender, and he said, come down on Wednesdays. Jackie hangs out here. And we just became a thing. We hung out with him on Wednesday nights. And he said, hey, Joan Rivers is looking for new, fresh, young writers for her radio show. So we get the gig from Jackie. And now here I am waiting outside in the hallway to go into the studio, waiting for Joan Rivers to come in. I'm, you know, 26 years old, and I'm pacing. I'm sweating. I'm like, I'm not really a writer. Like, I can write jokes, but maybe I shouldn't have taken this gig. This is Joan Rivers. And she walks in. She's all of 4 foot nothing with her high heels and a dress. And she walks in. She goes, hi, are you one of my new writers? I said, yeah. She goes, are you a comic? I said, yes, I'm a comic. She goes, good, I love comics. Wait till you get in here. And she opens the door and she goes, welcome to my hellhole. This is the bottom of the barrel in show business. Now I'm on radio. And it was just so funny. And she made us so relaxed. She gave us coffee and soda and candy. Eat the sugar, eat the sugar. It keeps the brain going. It gets you excited. And she was just really, really down to earth and cool. Really amazing.
So was she that way? She was like down to earth throughout the whole time working with her? Never got like
the
stressed?
Whole time. I've never had a problem with her. Then fast forward, I didn't write too long on that. She had gotten a new producer, and the producer brought in their own writers. So I did a couple of shows. Hey, I was getting paid $50 for 2 hours on the Tuesday night, you know, to write, it being in New York City, to sit across, I mean, literally, like, you two are sitting across from each other probably in the studio right now.
Yep.
That's
yep.
how close I was sitting with Joan Rivers, and handing her jokes on a piece of paper. Like, if she was talking about something, I'd write down something funny and I'd hand it to her, and she'd say it if it was funny. But then I didn't see her for, you know, whatever. I went about my business, and she went about hers, and she was a celebrity, and I was nobody. And about 2010, I had the luck of getting a phone call from this organization called Mikey's Way, which raises money for children with cancer. And they said, hey, we'd like you to come and open. We have Joan Rivers performing, and we're looking for an opener. You were recommended to us, but send us a clip because they're going to pick, Joan's going to pick which one she wants. They're going to send about five different comics. Mm-hmm. And she picked me. And then after that, every time she, you know, she worked in the Northeast, she her people would call me to open for her.
Did she remember you? When she saw that clip, did she remember you?
She didn't remember me from the radio. I had said that to her the first time we were backstage. Because when you were, let me just say something about Joan Rivers. When you worked with Joan Rivers, it was a professional operation. And so as a comic, we don't need sound checks, really, right? We show up and we're going to, hey, you know, what time am I going on? Right. You're going on at 8. All right, I'll be there at 7:30. So with Joan, the show was at 8. You had to be there at 5:30. And so I got to the theater at 5:30, and I'm like, what the heck do I have to be here so early for? Like, I'm just going out, I'm going to do 25 minutes in front of her, and then I'm done. Joan had a band on stage, and she had it all set up, and she had a whole routine that she did. She introduces you in her show. So you can't lose, first of all, when you're in a 1,500-seat theater, and Joan Rivers is backstage on the microphone introducing the show, and you know it's Joan Rivers, and then she introduces you. You know, she says, if it was you, Davin, she'd be like, oh, you know, please welcome. She always did the old joke, you know, not the best comic in the business, but the best comic in his price range.
Right.
You know, Chris Monty, you know, or right. Davin Rosenblatt, or Joe Curry, and you go out, and just from that moment on, you could only fall on your face because you weren't good after that, because she introduced you, that was it. Your table was set. If you were good, you had to do 20 or 25 minutes. It was killer. But you had to rehearse like that. Mm-hmm. So you had to be there an hour and a half, 2 hours before the show. And then she did this little gag with me where she'd say, I'd say, thank you, good night, and I'd walk off, and she'd get back on the mic and say, you were wonderful, go back out, take another bow, and she'd make you do that like 7 times. All right, get the F off stage, and she'd that was her show, you know, and it was just great, really, really funny.
Did, a lot of these celebrity comics will have, like, certain rules or restrictions that their opening act can't do, whether it be words, subject matter, content. Did Joan ever have anything that she did not want you to do or talk about?
She didn't. Yeah, she didn't want me or a lot of her openers to be dirty.
Okay.
She
well, you're
wanted
very clean.
To be the shock of filth, and she was. She would. I mean, she would say, you know, four-letter words. She used the C word. She would use all these words. She didn't want you to. I could get away. We're on a podcast right now, right?
Yes.
You could say what you want.
Yeah, you can curse.
I could get away with a shit or a bitch here and there, but I wouldn't. I wouldn't use the F word. I wouldn't use anything like that. She wanted to be that. So that was the only thing she asked of you, was just be clean. You know, you could talk about adult content, adult topic, but don't be vulgar or use a lot of four-letter words, because I do that, and I don't want it to be too much of that then, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. No, that's smart.
Not that she was afraid to follow it, because she could follow anything, but I understand, you know?
Sure.
It's like, you know, you don't want, you know, if you're going to see Miles Davis, you don't want a young Miles Davis opening up for Miles Davis.
Right.
Which is always kind of interesting. We've talked about this on the show. Otto of Otto and George, who passed away this year as well, always had these filthy acts opening for him. And I always reasoned. I mean, I knew why a lot of them were, because they drove him to the gig.
Yeah.
But wait, which comic is this?
Otto.
We're talking about Otto.
Oh, Otto. Yeah.
Where how Otto would have like all these guys in front of him, and one was dirtier than the next.
Yeah, it was whoever had a valid driver's license that week.
Yeah.
Right.
But I always thought the same lines as Joan did, that if too much of it takes away from it.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I mean, I'm not a big headliner by any stretch, but I close in the country and around in Northeast and stuff, and when I'm working, and I have an opportunity where I can, they say, oh, bring, if you want to bring, you know, your opening act, you can bring them. I always try to bring somebody, a female, or somebody, you know, different than me, so it's not too much of the same thing, you know?
Right.
So, what, are there any, like, particular memories you have going back to the radio days? Like, any particular stories that you have, or experiences with Joan, with a guest, or something that she said or did while doing the radio? Anything that sticks out?
She told this great story about, I'm a big fan of all the old-time performers. Joe knows this. I'm
yes.
a big Rat Pack kind of guy.
Yes.
And we were on the radio, and she told this story off microphone. We were in commercial break, and she told a story about Sammy Davis Jr., and she said it was Vegas, because when she came up in the business, her big break was in 1965, and Carson put her on The Tonight Show, and that's when she blew up. She had been doing comedy for 5 years before that. She started around 1960, and then on her 50th, think about that, right? It only took you 5 years to become a star.
Wow.
Back then, if you were a woman and you were funny, you know, and you got on TV, you were set, because there wasn't a lot of competition like there is now.
Right.
She 65. She gets on it tonight. She blows up. So now she's working everywhere in the country, and she's in Vegas, and she goes to a Sammy Davis Jr. show, and she said she had never seen a performer perform. Sammy Davis Jr. did 5 hours, and he used to do an after show, which was his show started at 2 o'clock in the morning, and he would perform for all the entertainers that were working in Vegas that couldn't go to shows because they were doing shows at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock. So they all got off work, and they'd get dressed, and they'd come out to see his show, and he performed for all the dancing girls and the comics and the singers. And Joan said, "My God, this man did not know when to get off stage." She told the story. It was great. You know, to hear a Sammy Davis Jr. story from Joan Rivers. And then she told the story about Judy Garland, about Judy Garland had to get pushed on stage because she would be terrified. She'd go on stage and she'd be a phenomenal performer, but she'd be, and these are the things Joan learned from working with these people, but she was opening up back then in the 60s for Judy before she passed, and she said she panicked. She would say, "That's it. You know, I'm not going on. The show's canceled. Cancel the show. I can't go on." And I'm like, "Judy, what's wrong with you? There's 3,000 people out there waiting to see you." And then they literally have to drag her kicking and screaming on stage. But then once, you know, Judy got on stage, that was it. The lights came on and she'd go into Judy Garland. So it was cool to hear celebrity stories about big time superstars from a big time superstar, you know?
Well, it's funny. You said, you know, what she learned, you know, by working with these people and everything. I was kind of wondering what you learned as a stand-up by working with Joan, opening for
her. Here's what I learned from Joan Rivers, and I think we should all comics should have learned this, if not by now. You never stop creating. You never stop reinventing yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, she could have went down in flames many, many times in her career, but she never stopped. She just reinvented herself. When the Tonight Show thing ended and her talk show ended, what did she do? You know, she picked up her chips and she cashed them back in and said, "Okay, now I'm going to do this." Mm-hmm. She started motivational speaking after her husband died. After that, she started to do the red carpet and all the E! Shows and the reality shows. And now here's a woman, you know, late 70s, turning 80, who's connecting with everybody in a generation or three generations behind her. You know, she's on Twitter every day. She's on every social media site there is. She's on there. And she would, you know, she would actually have somebody tweeting it for her, but I was with her while we were at the theater, and she had her person, her assistant next to her, and she'd say, "This is funny, say this, tweet this," and she'd say something hysterical, and the person would tweet it for her on her Twitter page. And so she stayed current, and she always stayed creative, and that's the most important thing you can do as a comic. Don't become the same old act for 20 years. You know, always write. And that's one thing I love about my friend sitting next to you, Joe Curry. I haven't seen you, Davin, but I know you write as well, but in a while. But Curry, every time I see Curry, I look at him, I go, "You got a whole half hour." You know, and he's always writing. And so that's what, you know, Joan taught me, especially someone who was 81 years old and worked probably 360 days a year she worked.
Wow.
She never stopped working and she never stopped creating.
Well, I mean, we were just actually, before you came on, we were saying that was one of the things we do admire about her, the fact that she kept on creating everything. Now, here's the thing, though. When you're creating, there's new material and everything. And it's scary. It's dangerous because new material isn't as tested as the old standards. How did Joan handle a bad show?
You know what? I wouldn't know, because at the point when I was with her, I mean, I never really got into that. Like, when we would work together, we would, you know, I'd show up and we'd go through a dress rehearsal. I wouldn't have to do my whole act, but I would have to do my opening joke and my closing joke, and we would rehearse how I'm going to exit the stage. And I mean, everything, down to how many times I was going to walk back and forth, and everything was perfection with her. So we would do that. But then after that, you know, I kind of never really sat with her and got really, really, you know, buddy-buddy, because she kind of went to her dressing room then and needed to cool down and just get ready for her show.
Right.
So I kind of went to my dressing room. I had my own dressing room, and she always made sure that whatever was available to her was available to me. There would always be food and, you know, drinks and all that kind of thing in the dressing rooms. So she was good like that. And but she, I kind of let her have her own space. She would always have a little entourage of people as well. So I kind of never sat down, and I never saw her have a bad show because, you know, at the point, you're looking at a 50-year veteran at 80 years old going out there to do an hour and 20, and she was knocking out of the park every time. And everybody in that audience, and I seen the audience was anywhere from, you know, 21 years old to 81 years old.
Wow.
So she
wow.
was touching a wide range of, yeah. of ages, you know?
Did you ever witness? You probably didn't because, you know, by then, it was most of the shows were kind of set for her to succeed and everything because she's a big star and everything. But did you ever witness or see her handle hecklers? Because she put it in her documentary. She actually did a show where she had a heckler. I was just wondering if you had any questions.
I haven't witnessed it. We were doing theaters. When I was with her, it was always at a big theater. It was always at, you know, something that was 1,500 seats or more. We were doing big arenas. I mean, beautiful theaters. We worked the theater in Staten Island. The name escapes me right now, but we worked at the Palace in Stamford, Connecticut a couple of times. That was where I first met her, and there was a couple of theaters in Westchester we worked, in New Hampshire. But we were doing these big, big theaters, and I don't think that that element was there because it was just, you know how it is. Theater's different than doing nightclubs.
Yes. Right.
You know, when you're a comic and you're doing nightclubs every night, and then you get a theater gig and you walk in, a professional theater, you walk in like, now I've made it.
Yes.
You almost don't want to go back to comedy clubs.
Yes, yes.
You know, so I didn't witness that, but there was some shock. I would listen to her, and she'd use the C word, and she'd use the, you know, MF, and you sometimes there would be a gasp from the audience, like, wow, we weren't expecting her to say motherfucking cunt. <You
know? laughs> So, kind of like we weren't expecting you to say it.
Yeah, really?
Podcast, yeah,
it's cool, like, but yeah.
That was for Joan. That one was for Joan.
Okay. I don't care. I just wasn't expecting it. I've never seen you use that language before.
Oh, you gotta hang out with me when I'm watching the Jets.
there's just cause for it when watching the Jets.
Well, with me watching the Giants last night.
What a Giants, correct.
Yeah.
Did you ever get it like a glimpse? Did she ever share with you any of like her personal life or anything? Or stuff that just like, you know, people who watched her on TV or in the shows wouldn't have? Did you ever get like a perspective of who she was?
The last show that I did with her, Melissa was at. This first time I met Melissa. I met her briefly, you know, I said hello and that kind of thing. And she said, oh, this is Chris Monte. He opened. She was nice. She said hello. But she's very, very close with her daughter. And I got to see that, you know, how they were on the TV show and how they were, you know, on the E! Shows and all that. That was all real. That was not for the cameras. They were very, very, they were best friends. They were inseparable, and it was nice to see that she was a good mom, and they were very close. She also loved animals. She was a big animal lover. She loved dogs. Sometimes she would have a dog with her in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you got to see the real side of her, and you got to see her, you know, her professionalism as somebody that came in and I need this, I need this, I need this. This is what I need for my show. And, you know, he needs this. I didn't use the same mic that Joan used. I had my own mic. She had her own mic. His mic needs to be on. You can't send him out there to die. He's got to have everything right. So she stood up for the comics and she wanted the show to be perfect. And she made sure everybody was, you know, a win-win. So I liked her professionalism. I liked her drive. And I liked it, you know, like I said, I didn't get to get too close with her as far as sitting with her and talking about her personal life, but to see that she was a good mother and she was like best friends with her daughter, and she was a real person, you know.
Right.
A lot of it was for the cameras, and but behind closed doors, she was a sweetheart. She'd give it a shirt off her back.
Did she ever? Because when comics get together, you know, we always talk about you know, funny comic stories, whether things go wrong to us or somebody else.
Yeah.
That's what comics do. Is Joe likes to say at the diner at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
You know, did she ever share any of that stuff with you?
She didn't share that, but I'll share what I felt. I, the first show I did for her, I was, you know, kind of a little bit nervous. I put my suit on in my dressing room. I'm getting, all right, you know, Mr. Monte, 5 minutes, we're going to take you down. It's places. And So I think, you know, Joan's going to come down and do her announcement. You know, she rehearsed. She does this whole thing, and she introduces the show, and she says, if you're going to be tweeting or checking your Facebook, you know, stay the F home. Don't come to live theater, you know. And she would all have this whole funny introduction she did off stage on a microphone. And then she introduces me, and I go out, and now I'm not really nervous. I was a little bit nervous, but I'm not nervous now because I'm like, all right, I did my first couple of jokes. Bam, they hit, and the crowd is great. They're accepting me because Joan Rivers is just, you know, whatever. But now it's like, all right, that little 3 minutes of phase passed. Now I got to be funny.
Right.
They're laughing because Joan Rivers introduced me, but now I got to be funny. So I'm funny and I'm doing my stuff, and I'm not paying attention to backstage because I'm killing. I'm doing great. And then I turn to do a pace. I walk and I look backstage, and Joan Rivers is sitting there on a stool with her hands, both of her hands, her chin on both of her hands, leaning over, watching my set, my complete set.
Wow.
I turned back and I went in my head, holy shit, Joan Rivers is watching me. It became real, and I'm like, oh my God, she's actually watching my set.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm like, I was nervous then. But I finished strong, and, you know, from that moment on, she always, anytime she came this way, like, I didn't go on the road with her. Mm-hmm. She toured all over. But anytime she came anywhere within 4 or 5 hours of New York City, they would call me and say, hey, are you available? And sometimes it would be 2 weeks before a gig, hey, what are you doing into, well, I'm booked, you know. But one time I had to turn down a gig because I had just gotten into a club and I didn't want to piss the club off by canceling 2 weeks before. They were going to headline me his first time.
Yeah, Mark would understand.
No, which I hated doing, but she understood because she was a comic and she comes from where we come from, you know.
Well, there's still that fear though. Wow, this is Joan Rivers. I don't want to piss her off. That had to be a hard decision.
I didn't know what to do at that point. I said, wow, I want to say no to Joan Rivers. And you know what it did? To be honest with you, because, and this is the respect that Joan gave me, the fact that I said no to her, the next time she hired me, she doubled my money.
There you go.
Wow.
Wow.
The next time she hired me, she said, her assistant actually always called me, this guy, Graham, great guy, and he would call me, he said, we want you to open, it's two nights, we're gonna give you double what we gave you last time. And I was like, okay, absolutely. So I think by actually saying no, it actually helped me. I thought it was going to hurt me, and I wasn't trying to, believe me, I was going to make about the same money to headline my own weekend at a club that she was going to pay me to open, but it would have been with Joan Rivers, and we would have been a great place. But I just didn't want to. You know how it is. It's a rock and hard place. You get into a new club that's going to headline you, and then 2 weeks before, you're going to cancel on them.
You can't.
After they've been advertising you, so I didn't want to do that. And when I said that to her, she understood that. And she was like, I totally understand that. You have a living to make.
It always struck me from all the interviews I saw with Joan that she was one of the comics that remained a stand-up comic, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
She didn't lose that.
Yeah.
She was always a stand-up comic, and she always loved stand-up comics. And if you were a comic, she would take time out to talk to you, probably over anybody else in show business.
Mm.
She said, you know, comics are the heartbeat of show business, and we get treated sometimes the worst. But actors, singers, everybody else in any form of show business, you know, which I respect everybody, and I love this business that we're in, we outwork everybody. You know, we do. We work every night. I worked last night, Monday night. You know, I'm off tonight. I'm working tomorrow night. We'll work. We'll go anywhere. Give us a microphone. We're our own writers, producers, stars, directors. So she loved that, you know, and she was always, to her dying day, was a comic first, always.
Give me, in closing on Joan, give me one word to describe Joan Rivers.
It's been used all the last 2 weeks, but Trailblazer is probably the best description, because she was the first woman. You know, she was really, you know, there was Moms Mabley and there was women out there, but, you know, she set the tone for women, and she was the first woman to host her show, and, you know,
she was
a trailblazer. Probably icon would be the word I would use.
Icon
is probably the word.
Yeah.
I would use her as an icon, especially for female comics out there who get shit on in this business, and you know that as guy comics, because we don't see it as much as, you know, we're friends with a lot of female comics. She set the tone, and she was successful, and every female comic should take a page out of her book, because, you know, that's the way to do it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, So before we get out of here, Chris, where can people find out where you're going to be performing?
You can go to chrismontylive.com, M-O-N-T-Y, mm-hmm. chrismontylive.com. You can follow me at Comic Chris Monty on Twitter. There's a link to everything from my website. There's a link to my show in New York City, my play, and all my stand-up appearances. So
if I can interject,
it's got all the info you need.
Right. If I can interject, also, he mentioned his play. It's called Sit Down, Shut Up, and Eat. It is absolutely...
Shut up, sit down, and eat.
Sorry.
Well, the plugmeister can't even do a decent plug.
Sometimes you switch it. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you, Joe.
Please, everybody go see it. You will have such a great day.
We're opening at the Snapple Theater Center on Broadway on the 12th of October. We run every Sunday. And if you go to chrismontylive.com, there is a big link to that show right on the front page, on the home page. You can click that. It takes you to the site. You can buy tickets. You can see the schedule. So everything's right there.
Very good.
Great.
Well, Chris, thank you for coming on. And,
thanks so much, Chris.
We sharing some insights on Joan. We appreciate it.
It was a great experience to work with her. She's definitely touched me, and it was sad to see her go. But you know what? I'll sign up right now for a 50-year career and, you know, not suffering at the end.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same here. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Be good. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Chris.
Thanks
great. Thank you
me,
so
guys.
Much for calling, pal.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Those were great stories.
It was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really phenomenal.
Chris did a great job. There was something I wanted to mention about... just the experience of her dying, because like some people that are fans of the show actually are on my Facebook friends list.
Yes,
and I, you know, I was just cranking out jokes.
Yes.
about Joan and everybody.
Yeah.
And somebody put too soon. I don't know if they were serious or not. Like one of the jokes, and I put, and I really believe this. I put on there, Joan would have been quicker.
Oh yeah,
because Joan, yes. Joan was the one comic where there was no too soon.
No,
she goofed on herself more than anybody. She goofed on dead celebrities.
Yeah,
and everything. And actually, one of the jokes, actually, I'm thinking about putting into the act.
Oh really?
Because it's just such a joke.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's like,
yeah.
It's like type of joke like your dad would tell you. I really don't write, but I put it up there, so I'll share it. You know, Joe, you can uck me as it probably deserves. But it was something like this. I go, you know, Joan Rivers goes up to heaven to meet Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ goes, "We've been expecting you." And Joan goes, "Yeah, I know. Somebody needs to tell you not to wear white robes after Labor Day." It's the type of joke your dad would tell you.
Yes, yes.
I didn't say I was closing with it.
Well, Lisa said Joan would have loved what you said, Davin.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a tribute.
That was good, because it's just the kind of thing she would say.
Like, I think the first thing I wrote is, as a tribute to the legend Joan Rivers passing away, I think it's my duty to tell you look terrible in that outfit.
Yes. Really, yes.
Because she was a comic, and I think Chris's stories really shed some more light on that.
It really did. It just, with her work ethic. How she wanted everything just so, how she treated people very well,
mm-hmm.
how she treated the other comics. And it's just, just how, like, you're a comic. A lot of comics have strayed away from being that. Eddie Murphy is one of the best comics there ever was,
yeah.
but he strayed away from being a comic.
Yes, totally.
You know, and there were some other comics that have strayed away from being a comic, but she was a true comic and loved the business and loved the art of it.
So let's, take our final break, because I don't think there's anything we're going to do, any silly stuff in this segment that's going to top what we just heard about Joan Rivers.
No.
So let's take our first break. On this break again, I don't know if you guys want to pee during this. You know, a lot of times we play tunes, which is great music and everything, but tonight we're doing something a little different. We're going to be playing Joan Rivers. This is a clip from an appearance she did in London in 2007. So this is about 25 years after the first clip we played, and you can see how she's still a driving force. There's some consistencies, but you can still that she's still remaining current and hip with the references she's using and everything. So that's going to be on this break, and then we'll come back with the scammer stuff.
You can listen to Davin's Den live every Tuesday on extremejams.com. That's extremejamz.com. WKAD Radio, Wicked, Clutch and Wiggle, CyanetRadio.com, TalkSuperStation.com, The Juggernaut, MacDaddyRadio.com, iHeartRadio, RuthlessRadio.fm, DavinsDen.com. TheIndieAuthority.com also has apps so you can listen live on all mobile platforms, including BlackBerry, Android, and Apple. If you miss Tuesday night's show, you can download the show at any time on DavinComedy.com, DavinsDen.com, PodAlmighty.com, Stitcher.com, iTunes, the Android app, iHeartRadio, RuthlessRadio.fm. Scammer clips are available on iHeart or DavinsDen.com. iHeart can only be heard in the U.S.